Injured in a car accident? We cap attorney's fees at 30% of the first million. Any recovery above that is all yours. No recovery, no fees or costs. If another lawyer wants more, Lawyer Up 904. For accidents, injuries, and more, Lawyer Up 904. Jacksonville.
The sports world keeps spinning, and the local conversation continues. Now, Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Tuesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, our late night edition here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Are you kidding? Where else would you rather be at 10 o'clock Eastern time here on a Tuesday night than with Dylan Denmark and yours truly on Hacker After Dark? We have a ton to get into over the next 2 hours. We got some college football. We got some National Football League matters to discuss. We got some high school football to discuss. Sprinkle in a little World Cup as well. And we got you until midnight tonight. Here's what the guest lineup looks like. Coming up in less than 20 minutes, my friend Brent Beard. You see him on First Coast News. You get him right here with me on Hacker After Dark every week. Rivalry week starts Thursday night with the Egg Bowl. You got the Iron Bowl. You got clean old-fashioned hate in the state of Georgia. You got, obviously, games with Florida, Florida State, rivalries all over the place. We'll talk a lot of college ball with Brent Beard in less than 20 minutes. Coming up in about 45 minutes, we will go to Baltimore, Maryland. The Ravens in town on Sunday to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. We will get the Baltimore perspective of this matchup on Sunday with Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore. He's kind of our guy here on Hacker After Dark when it comes to the Baltimore Ravens. So we will talk to Luke Jones about Lamar Jackson, about John Harbaugh, about Calais Campbell. By the way, I didn't know this. Calais Campbell has 4.5 sacks this year. He's 36 years old. Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker combined have 5.5. Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker combined only have one more sack than 36-year-old Calais Campbell. Yikes. So we'll talk to Luke Jones coming up in less than 45 minutes. And in the 11 o'clock hour, it is regional final week in the world of high school football. If you win on Friday night, you're going to the state Final Four in your given classification. We'll talk to Justin Barney from Channel 4. I'll also talk with Donovan Maslin, the head coach of Reigns, as they get ready to take on Bowles on Friday night. And David Penland, the head coach of University Christian, as they have a rematch, a giant rematch on Friday night against Verlin Dorminey and Trinity Christian. So we got a ton to do. Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. But as we always do, here on Hacker After Dark, we kick it off with a big deal of the night and Dylan Denmark. Let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
So I'm watching the college football playoff rankings show on ESPN earlier this evening, and it struck me, you know, there's going to come a time where this 4-team playoff will go away and we will have a 12-team playoff. And I wanted to look at the rankings tonight to tell you what we could be anticipating if the 12-team playoff was going on this year. All right, so teams 1 through 4, that's Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, and TCU, as of the rankings tonight. Obviously, Ohio State and Michigan play each other on Saturday, but bear with me. As of tonight, those four teams would have byes in the first round. Your 5-12 matchup would have Kansas State out of the Big 12 at 8-3, traveling to Death Valley to play the LSU Tigers at 9-2. Your 11 seed, Penn State, James Franklin, and the Nittany Lions would go to Los Angeles to play Lincoln Riley and Southern Cal in the first round. Your 7-10 matchup, you wish Hendon Hooker wouldn't have gotten hurt, but if we had a 12-team playoff right now, Tennessee would be going to Alabama in round number one. Can you imagine that rematch? Tennessee going to Alabama in round number one. And your 8-9 matchup would have Oregon traveling to Clemson. What would that mean in the second round? Well, Georgia, as the one seed, would get the winner of Clemson, Oregon. Ohio State, as the two seed, would get the winner of Alabama and Tennessee. You imagine Ohio State, Alabama in the quarterfinals? Michigan, as the three seed, would get the winner of Southern Cal and Penn State. And TCU, as the four seed, would get the winner of LSU and Kansas State. But I want to go a little further down in the rankings. You know, people always talk about 12 teams. And at the end of the day, it will be 12 teams. But right now, with a four-team playoff coming into Thanksgiving weekend, realistically, there are only probably six or seven teams that have a shot at the college football playoff. When this thing expands to 12 teams, oh my gracious, 13 Washington, 14 Utah, 15 Notre Dame, 16 Florida State. If this was a 12-team playoff this year, Florida State would still be in the running here on Thanksgiving weekend. North Carolina at 17, UCLA at 18, so on and so forth. What a 12-team playoff will do will give so many more teams so many more opportunities. Because right now, the way it is with a four-teamer, and look, I'm happy we have a four-team playoff. It was a great start, but it's not enough. 12 teams is the way to go. I could listen to an 8-team conversation. I've often said, and I don't know why this is so complicated, if you were to do 8, you take the 5 Power 5 conference champions, you take the 2 best Power 5 at-larges, and you take the best group of 5. That would be my scenario in an 8-teamer. A 12-teamer is even better. 16, I think at that point, you might start getting too many. I think 1 through 4 should be rewarded with a bye week. But can you imagine if Alabama played Ohio State in the quarterfinals, Clemson played Georgia in the quarterfinals, Southern Cal played Michigan in the quarterfinals? That's what you would have coming into this weekend, that opportunity for those teams to get into the college football playoff. And again, Florida State, coming in at number 16, I got to tell you, I don't know if there is a more improved team in America than the Florida State Seminoles. And I mean that. You look at the teams ranked ahead of them. Notre Dame, yeah, okay. They were not great last year. But Utah, Washington, Kansas State, Penn State, Tennessee, Oregon. I mean, Tennessee obviously has improved. Keep in mind, they went to a bowl game last year. When's the last time the Noles went to a bowl game? And now they're number 16 in America. After they beat Florida on Friday night, they're going to finish 9-3. If they win their bowl game, they're going to have 10 wins. 10 wins, potentially, for Mike Norvell and Florida State. It has been an absolutely unbelievable turnaround for the Noles. Really something to watch. Good for Mike Norvell. Good for Florida State. You know, look, I have fun with Seminole fans, but I can admit when a team has turned the corner, my gracious, has Florida State turned the corner. They are a good football team. And if they beat Florida on Friday night, as I expect they will, then you have victories over Miami, particularly if they beat Florida in blowout fashion, then Florida State runs the state. This is their state for the here and now. You already beat Miami by 42 points. Just beat them to death up and down the field in Coral Gables. If you beat Florida, man, that is a good, good recruiting tool for both high school kids and in the transfer portal. On the flip side, Florida I get the feeling they are going to play well on Friday night. I look at this game kind of similar to the 2004 game. And in fact, that was the last time an unranked Florida team beat a ranked Florida State team in Doak Campbell. That was the Seattric Faison game, the Ron Zook Field game. Florida came in unranked. Florida State, I want to say, was right about where they are now, 15, 16, something like that. And Florida went in there and won the game. Now, I don't expect Florida to win. But what I do expect is Florida to play considerably better than they did last week against Vanderbilt. If that didn't slap you in the face, if that didn't, you know, hurt your pride a little bit, if you're in a Florida Gator uniform, then I don't know what to tell you, because it was embarrassing. It was downright embarrassing. And at least you have one more opportunity to right that wrong. If Florida goes into Tallahassee on Friday night and beats Florida State, no one will remember that Vanderbilt game. That Vanderbilt game was as if it never happened. But if you go to Tallahassee and lose, like I anticipate they will, then all of a sudden you're 6-6. You lose to every rival you got, Tennessee, LSU, Georgia, Florida State. And it starts a really, really interesting offseason for the Gators. Heck, it's already been interesting. With guys getting dismissed from the team, guys entering the transfer portal, already half a dozen are in that boat. More to follow. Speaking of that, are you watching what's happening in Coral Gables too? Miami is having a lot of guys as well already enter the transfer portal. This is what it is. Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier in year number one, some of it is getting out the riffraff. Some of it is getting out the guys that don't want to do things the way they're being done now. Some is, look, you're just simply not going to play here. Go find greener pastures elsewhere. But I would imagine the amount of attrition that you see in the coming days and weeks at both Miami and Florida, a majority of that attrition will be by choice by the player. They want out because they're not getting playing time, or they don't like the direction, they don't like the new coaching staff. And I would imagine both Mario Cristobal and Billy Napier aren't going to shed a lot of tears over guys wanting out. Because if guys want out, then those are guys that you don't want there in the first place. You want the guys that are bought in to what you're doing if you're Cristobal in Miami, and obviously if you're Billy Napier at the University of Florida. But it will be fascinating for both the Gators and the Hurricanes in the offseason to see how these recruiting classes finish out. Both teams are in line for top 10 classes right now, but more so in the transfer portal. Billy Napier, you got to probably go find a starting quarterback in the transfer portal. If Anthony Richardson leaves, like many anticipate he will, who's going to be the starting quarterback in Gainesville in 2023? Jalen Kitna? Jack Miller? Jaden Rashada? Max Brown? No way. No way you're going to go into a season with one of those guys as your starting quarterback. You're going to go into the transfer portal, and you're going to go try to find your Jaden Daniels. That's what Billy Napier is going to do. What LSU did with Arizona State and Jaden Daniels, that's what Florida is going to try to do. It doesn't take a rocket scientist either, if you look at quarterbacks around the country, to think which guys might be looking to get out of their current situation, which guys may be looking for a change of scenery, which guys might be looking to leave a program to have a better chance of winning at another program. You already hear all sorts of rumors. I know there's a Sam Hartman rumor out there. I don't know about that. I don't know if he's going to go to the league or not from Wake Forest. Are you kidding? I would take Sam Hartman right now to be the starting quarterback for Florida in 2023. I just don't know if Hartman's the kind of quarterback that Billy Napier wants. But there's at least a rumor with him. And again, all of these are rumors. That's all they are. they're nothing more than rumors at this point. But you hear, the more people you talk to, the more rumors that you hear about this group of five quarterback that might be looking to come up to the Power Five, or this quarterback that's unhappy in the Big Ten that might want to look for something in the Southeastern Conference. So, yeah, it'll be a very interesting offseason, assuming Anthony Richardson goes pro. I think that is a fairly safe assumption at this point. I would doubt he plays in the bowl game. So I would think this is probably Anthony Richardson's final game as a Florida Gator. As far as the bowl game, I imagine you start Jalen Kitna in that game because he's at least a guy that has some experience getting out there and some garbage time opportunities this year for the Gators. As far as Miami goes, you need to win on Saturday to become bowl eligible. Miami has to beat Pitt to become bowl eligible. If Miami doesn't beat Pitt, well, that's a big deal. You lose out on those 15 practices. You lose out on a bowl game. That would not be a good year number one for Mario Cristobal. So it's a huge situation in Miami trying to beat Pitt to try to get to a bowl game. More college football coming up. Brent Beard, you see him on First Coast News. You also get him right here with me weekly on Hacker After Dark. Coming up later on in the 10 o'clock hour, we'll talk a little National Football League. The Baltimore Ravens come into town on Sunday to take on the Jacksonville Jaguars. We will go to Baltimore. Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore, will get his thoughts on Lamar Jackson, Calais Campbell. How about former Florida Gator wide receiver DeMarcus Robinson? You want to talk about a guy that just needed a change of scenery. DeMarcus Robinson has turned in, due to injury in Baltimore, to maybe their number one option. The guy had over 100 yards receiving last week, doing a really good job there with the Ravens. So we'll talk Ravens-Jaguars coming up later on in the 10 o'clock hour. It is a Tuesday night in Jacksonville, Florida. We're glad you're with us here on Hacker After Dark. It's 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Brent Beard talking rivalry week in the world of college football. He is coming up next.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL. Now, another interview on the Farrah and Farrah phone line, brought to you by the accident attorneys at Farrah and Farrah.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. Thanksgiving on the horizon. That means rivalry week on the horizon. Of course, Florida and Florida State this year on Friday night. What a change that'll be. Black Friday for the Gators and the Seminoles. Let's talk about all of it with my friend Brent Beard. You see him on First Coast News. You also get him right here with me weekly on Hacker After Dark. Mr. Beard, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing well. Happy Thanksgiving to you and also our listeners. I will throw this caveat in here, and we'll be real brief about it, is one of the models that we have seen with the new championship situation with the expansion of the playoff is moving the calendar up a week, which means that teams are going to play and start the season probably week zero. And what's going to also happen, and this is more of a dramatic change, is the rivalry games are going to be played on the weekend before Thanksgiving, which would have been last weekend, and the championship games are going to be on the weekend after Thanksgiving. So there's some things I like about that, that there's some things that would be take getting used to, but the calendar is going to change in college football because of the playoffs.
Yeah, that would be weird because you always think of Thanksgiving, and then for us, Florida, Florida State, or Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, Georgia Tech, that would be a little bit different if everything's moved up. Brent, I certainly want to spend a lot of time on the Gators and the Noles. Before we get there, there was a report out in the state of Mississippi last night that Lane Kiffin to Auburn appears to be a done deal. Now, Lane Kiffin went on Twitter and basically made fun of the guy who reported that. It was a sports director at some Mississippi TV station, blue checkmark guy, for whatever it's worth, on Twitter. You're from Alabama. Your brother does sports radio currently in the state of Alabama. What are you hearing as far as Auburn and Lane Kiffin?
If it is Lane, I don't think anything. Auburn's not going to do anything, I don't believe, before the Iron Bowl. It would be a distraction virtually if they did. I mean, they would be excited about it, but that's kind of what I've also heard from Auburn people is they don't want anything to take the attention away from the game. So if they're going to make a decision and announcement, it would be probably Saturday night or Sunday. Now, I've talked to some friends who and some contacts at Ole Miss who thinks also that Lane's staying at Ole Miss. He was given a contract extension and a raise last week to ponder. But again, the bottom line here is, and I'll say this over and over again, anytime you see Lane Kiffin involved with something, people need to be aware that his agent is Jimmy Sexton, and Sexton is doing his job by getting Lane's name out there, involved with other jobs, so he will get a better deal at least at Ole Miss if he stays there.
Well, and it's interesting, again, Brent Beard here with us, it's interesting, the coaching carousel, the rumors already spinning, and the season hasn't even ended yet. There was the Lane Kiffin situation last night, and then earlier in the day, 24/7 Sports is reporting that Deion Sanders, or at least his representatives, have been in contact with Colorado and with South Florida. Now, when we talked about Deion in the past, Brent, we were thinking more along the lines of maybe Georgia Tech, maybe
right.
Auburn. Had not heard Colorado and certainly had not heard South Florida, but if you're the South Florida Bulls, if you're able to pull Deion Sanders to be the head coach of your team down in Tampa, I can't imagine what that would do for that university.
See, that would be a good move for Deion because it would be a safe move. See, his name's been mentioned with a lot of high-profile jobs. I mean, his name was mentioned for Auburn at one point. Hank, let's just be honest here. When you have not been a Division I head coach and you have not been a Division I head coach in the SEC, going from Jackson State to, say, an Auburn is a really, really tough transition. So the reality is, and I think he'd do kind of similar to what Lane Kiffin did. When Lane goes to South Florida, gets a job there for a few years, and then after that, obviously goes to Ole Miss. So you're right about that. I mean, if he wants to do it, that would be a good move for the not only the school, but it would be a good move for Deion because he could get his feet wet, he could make his mistakes there, and then he would lily pad from there to a more high-profile college. So hopefully that makes sense if that's the route he wants to go.
You get Brent Beard on First Coast News. You also get him right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. All right, Brent, Friday night, Doak Campbell Stadium. Boy, to say Florida is limping coming in is an understatement. I don't know what on earth that was in Nashville, but that was pathetic. They play Florida State, a team that I think their fans, their program smells blood in the water. They might be out for revenge over the last 4 years. I think it's going to be an awful tough putt for the Gators on Friday night, Brent.
But I do think they play much better. They will be the thing with these rivalry games is the rivalry games are just a different animal than what you get during the year because the underdogs are a lot more focused and they're a lot more motivated than they are almost during any time of the season. That does make a difference. I'll be interested to know how many people will miss this game because they think it's on Saturday and they won't even tune in Friday night. So I would imagine word would get out by then, but it was an awful performance in Nashville. The SEC Network had it on last night, and just the mistakes at the worst possible times. I mean, the kicking game mistakes were enough to have them lose the game, trying to field a punt that was just absolutely awful attempt inside your 10-yard line, missing an extra point. You've got a really nice run that I think it was Montrell Johnson, and you've got a wide receiver that lines up offside when all you had to do was ask the official, am I right or not, which is what he should have done. But what this means now is consecutive seasons for Florida with a conference record below 500. I mean, that's disappointing. That's something that they obviously have got to work on. But Hack, to me, it comes back down to I know they dropped five passes. They were 4-15 on third down. But they've got to be able to run the ball. I mean, again, that stat does not lie. When they run for 210 or more, they're undefeated. When they run for less than that, they haven't won. It's going to be very crucial for them to be able to run the ball. And even if they struggle at first, they've got to stay with it. And, Hank, please explain to me how the best running quarterback besides Hendon Hooker at Tennessee had no carries in the first half.
Yeah, no, that was puzzling. He had 400 yards passing for the game, although I'm going to explain that to you, Brent. You explained to me how on the Hail Mary to end the game, that ball lands in row G of the stands, because I thought that was just an amazing play. Oh, quite frankly, it left me speechless. The final play of the game lands in the stands. That's how bad a throw that was.
It was. I mean, he's got to know better than to do that. You've got to give your guys an opportunity to be able to catch the ball. See, Hank, my thing is, he doesn't need to be Superman. He just needs to put normal throws near his receivers. So, and that's why I say again, the more they run the ball, and the less he throws, the better chance they have to win.
Couple of more for Brent Beard. You get him on First Coast News and right here on 1010XL. All right, let's quickly look at both sides of this. From the Florida State perspective, to me, Brent, it's simple. 45-3 over Miami. If you put a two-touchdown-plus beating on the Gators, you control the state of Florida, which is an unbelievable tool to use in recruiting and the transfer portal. I will say there might be a little bit of pressure on Florida State, too, because everybody expects them to win this game. That's number one. And number two, if you're not going to beat Florida now, when are you going to beat them? Because you would have to assume if Billy Napier's plan comes to fruition, this will be the worst Florida team that Florida State sees. So a little bit of pressure to win the game, Brent. But having said that, I can't envision a scenario other than turnovers, penalties, just playing very uncharacteristic where Florida State loses this ball game.
They are arguably certainly one of, if not the most improved team in the nation, which is frankly amazing that they, including the bowl game, would have a chance to win double-digit games. Look, the thing that's impressive about them is they're averaging 239 rushing a game and 250 passing. That's as balanced as you can be. They rush for at least 200 yards in six straight games. And the amazing thing is, how many teams would love to have this? They lead the country, Hag, with 80 of 20-plus yards. I'm not sure anybody thought that they would be this explosive during this point. And the reality is their defense has played well. They had the fourth straight game last week that they held opponent to just 3 points in the first half. So they are really playing as well as we have seen them in a long time. Now, your point's a really good one. This will be Billy Napier's worst Florida team. So you would expect that FSU at some point will win comfortably. But again, as we said a minute ago, that very well may not happen. It could be a very, very interesting game Friday night.
You know, the one thing from the Florida side of things is, if it gives you hope at all, Florida's obviously a little bit more tested than Florida State. Now, Florida's lost a lot of these games, but playing the Georgias of the world, playing – I know both teams played LSU, but Florida played them when LSU was considerably better than when Florida State played them. Playing Tennessee – look, Florida State has beat up, admittedly, on Louisiana, Syracuse, Georgia Tech, and a down Miami team. So I do think Florida has faced tougher competition. I don't know if that will mean anything on Friday night. But the only thing that would give me hope if I'm a Gator fan is that maybe Florida State, other than perhaps Clemson, hasn't seen some of the athletes that Florida can put on the field.
Agree. And look, we cover it closely, but the ACC, again, is nowhere near the conference that you've got in the Big Ten or the SEC. Now, as you and I talked in the preseason, and the point we agreed on together was – that what FSU's got to be able to do is they've got to win these 50-50 games, and they've done the majority of that this year. And I agree with you totally as far as the competition is concerned. And Florida's done a lot of that, except when you got to Vandy and when you got to Kentucky. So I think that's a thing, Hack, that if it is a close game in the fourth quarter, Florida State has certainly had more success in these games that could go either way than Florida has.
Brent, we got about 2 minutes to go. Let's end with this. The big game nationally is Michigan and Ohio State. It's an unbelievable game. First time I think both teams are unbeaten since 2006. So you're talking 16 years. What do you expect to happen in the game? And do you believe the loser of this game is eliminated from the playoff? Or are they still alive?
I think they're still alive. I just think there's still too much that's going on here. I don't know if how much the committee, if at all, is going to penalize Michigan for a close win. Now, Blake Corum being injured, that's going to be the big question this week. The running back, who, frankly, is a Heisman Trophy contender, is he going to be able to play? That would make a huge difference. I think the thing, frankly, with both these teams, and you mentioned schedule a few minutes ago, and even according to ESPN, Michigan's played the second weakest non-conference schedule in Division One. Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn, only UCLA's played a weaker non-conference schedule. So will that come back to haunt either one of them? In Ohio State's schedule, it's not been great either. Matter of fact, the interesting note here, Ohio State has not lost consecutive games to Michigan since 99 and 2000.
Wow.
So it's been a while, has it not? But no, to your point, and it's a good one, it is the losers, especially in a close game, Hack, that they may be have some nervous moments, but I think they absolutely could still be looking to get into the top four.
I guess it boils down to, and it would be fascinating, and it would probably take a TCU loss, but would a one-loss Michigan get in over a one-loss Pac-12 champion Southern Cal? Or I guess a better scenario would be, if Michigan wins on Saturday, would a one-loss Ohio State get in over a one-loss conference champion Southern Cal? To me, Brent, there's the quandary. I think Ohio State is going to hold more value. Both big brands, but Ohio State is kind of the brand, and they've played a tougher schedule. So if Michigan were to win, Ohio State with one loss, I think would have a heck of an argument over Southern Cal, and I think Ohio State would even have a conversation to get in over a two-loss SEC champion in LSU.
That, the question that the committee would have to answer, to your point, is how much do they value the conference champions? So that will be tested, wouldn't it, Hack? Because they've said all along that that's been important to them, and will that be the ultimate key to getting in? You're right, particularly if it's a Southern Cal team that's got their hands full with Notre Dame. If they're able to win your conference championship, that I'm not saying it'd be a coin toss. I'm just saying that it would be fascinating which way the committee goes.
Hopefully in a few years we'll have 12 teams in the playoff and we won't have this problem.
We won't.
Because Ohio State
That's
and
right.
Michigan would both comfortably be in a 12-team scenario. We're always comfortable with Mr. Brent Beard. He's always kind enough to join us here on Hacker After Dark. Brent, thank you as always, my friend. A very happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. We'll talk again next week when the dust settles from rivalry weekend. But again, brother, always appreciate you, and happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Same to you, Hank. And I'm guessing that young man will enjoy a drumstick and some pie at some point, correct?
There is no question about it. My man is fired up for Thanksgiving over at Grandma's. Thank you, buddy.
My pleasure, pal. Take care.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Ravens and the Jaguars, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Of course, you'll hear the game right here on 1010XL. Let's go to Baltimore, Maryland. Let's find out about the Ravens, who are coming in here on Sunday afternoon. Our guy up in Baltimore is Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore. You can also follow him on Twitter, at Baltimore Luke. Luke, how we doing?
Doing well, Ryan. How are you?
Luke, we are good, man. Appreciate the time, as always. And all right, we talked before the season started. We didn't know how the division in the AFC North was going to play out. We were both fairly certain Baltimore was going to have a good squad. It's been interesting to this point, but overall, I imagine Baltimore's right where you thought they would be, right in the thick of it there in the AFC.
I think this is, maybe not all the details exactly as I anticipated, but the Ravens being 7-3, going into the second half of the season now, the bye's in the rearview mirror. They get the win against Carolina, which was ugly, but it was a win. But if you had asked me before the season if they're in that neighborhood of somewhere around 7-3, 6-4, something like that, I would have thought that. I would have thought that they'd be battling it out with Cincinnati for the AFC North, and certainly Pittsburgh and Cleveland lagging behind. So I can't say I've been terribly surprised by anything I've seen. Certainly that doesn't mean that they don't have some areas where they need to improve and areas where they are absolutely excelling in recent weeks. But, I think the Ravens being at 7-3, probably not a big shock, even if some of those early season results with some of those fourth quarter blown leads certainly took some people by surprise earlier in the season.
You know, Luke, down here in Jacksonville, I think Jaguar fans sort of follow the Ravens because they remember those battles back in the AFC Central, right? Those great battles between Ray Lewis and Baltimore, Mark Brunell, Jimmy Smith, and the Jaguars. And certainly that division is long gone. Jacksonville and Baltimore do not play each other very often. But one thing I've always admired about the Ravens since he was hired, the job that John Harbaugh has done there, he's probably going to find himself in Canton, Ohio one day. What is it about John Harbaugh that almost every year he's been there, Baltimore has been right in the thick of it?
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. I mean, I think he's brought a very high floor. I mean, the Ravens have only had a couple losing seasons under John Harbaugh, and he's been here 15 years now. And it's really just been a matter of, I think he trusts his players. I think he's created a very good culture. I think he's reinvented himself at times over the course of his tenure. I think, ask some of his players circa 2008, 2009, 2010, probably was considered a little bit of a harder personality, I guess. Maybe that ruffled some feathers the wrong way with some veteran players, but I think that's something that over time he's found a happy medium. I think he's a player's coach, but I think he also has very high expectations He trusts his players and treats them as men as long as they are accountable. So I think that's something that has held up and held it, that's kind of passed the test of time with a different era. You know, you kind of think back to, you know, you mentioned Ray Lewis years ago. You know, Ray Lewis and Ed Reed were still in the in their prime when John Harbaugh arrived, and you know, they had the Joe Flacco era and lots of success then, but also this most recent era of transitioning from Flacco to Lamar Jackson. I mean, this is a very different football team from where it was even a few years ago, let alone talking about a Super Bowl a decade ago. So I think any coach who can kind of stand that test of time, you know, I don't think it's artificially changing over time, but just evolving. I think that's something that John Harbaugh has done a really fantastic job doing. And I think, you know, what you mentioned about Canton in the Hall of Fame is very true, especially if he can win another Super Bowl here at some point before he calls it a career, at least here in Baltimore. So it's definitely something that I try to remind fans of a little bit. You know, certainly you want to win playoff games, you want to win Super Bowls, and you know, the Ravens, it has been 10 years now since the Super Bowl, which I'm not going to say anyone should be complaining about, but you know, it's been a minute at this point, but it's still a reminder of just how consistently good the Ravens have been, that they're always in the mix. And really, it takes a lot. Like last year, a slew of injuries, you know, kind of a historic rate of injuries that took them out of the playoffs ultimately. But every year you can kind of expect them to be in this territory we're talking about right now.
Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore. You can also follow him on Twitter at Baltimore Luke. He's with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. All right, Luke, you mentioned Lamar Jackson, and kudos to the Ravens franchise, because I think in a situation like this, the star quarterback looking for a new deal, it doesn't happen, the season starts, I would think that this would be a storyline. Yet, and this is an outside point of view certainly, when I'm hearing about Baltimore, I really don't hear a lot of that. It doesn't appear to be that big of a distraction, and obviously they're 7-3, so it doesn't appear to be a distraction inside that locker room either. But where is Baltimore with Lamar Jackson with that contract extension still looming?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's any different than it was when we talked before the season started. I mean, Lamar does not have an agent. By all accounts, it doesn't appear that he's had any contract discussions or negotiations with Eric DaCosta since training camp, which was a time period where they talked at least some. I'm not saying they were talking every day at that point, but just makes things difficult. I think, you know, if they had gotten closer to a contract before the season started, maybe there's something to be said that they could have, you know, pushed it across the finish line. But it's just, you know, he doesn't have that certified player agent, which I think just complicates things from a timing standpoint. But you just said it. I mean, I don't get the sense that it has been a distraction. I think it really is a testament to the organization and to Lamar Jackson that while they clearly have had differences of opinion as far as what compensation, what the framework should be, I don't think it's, you know, even though Lamar hasn't said this much, I think it's very clear he's looking for a contract with a much greater guarantee, if not a full guarantee, in the wake of the Deshaun Watson deal from back in March. But clearly the Ravens aren't on the same page there. And I think the 30 other NFL teams aren't on the same page there as it pertains to franchise quarterbacks. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this thing plays out starting this offseason when he presumably will receive the franchise tag if they don't get something done by early March. So I think that's, you know, things could change as far as the lack of animosity at that point. You know, and I think that would be understandable from either perspective. But as it pertains to the middle of the season, I don't think anything has dramatically changed. I certainly don't sense any kind of rift, you know, where you know, Lamar and the organization's on bad terms at this point. I think there was frustration at various times, but I think they both understand, you know, the business side of it and being able to compartmentalize that with the football side of it. And I would also say, just to, you know, throw it out there in terms of what his season has looked like, I think he's had a season that's been very good in some ways, and in some other ways, it hasn't been his best season. I think that, you know, the passing numbers since the first 3 weeks of the season when he threw 10 touchdown passes have been, you know, a little more middle of the road, certainly compared to where he was a few years ago when he was winning the MVP. So from that standpoint, I don't think the Ravens have probably changed their stance as far as what they value him to be. And I don't think Lamar has had, certainly not, I want to be clear, don't think he's had a bad season or anything that has altered, you know, where he would be coming from as far as what he's asking. So I think that was a long monologue to just kind of say it's kind of the status quo from where we were talking about this over the summer, and I think these sides will revisit it come February.
You know, you talk about the weapons Lamar Jackson has on that offense. I guess a pleasant surprise is a guy we're somewhat familiar with here in Jacksonville, and that's DeMarcus Robinson, the former Florida Gator. It didn't work out well for him in Kansas City. He just couldn't find himself on the field with all the talent that they had. He goes, I want to say he went to the Raiders, right? And that obviously didn't work out. He gets released. He ends up in Baltimore. And all of a sudden, DeMarcus Robinson's had a nice impact for that Ravens offense there.
He really has. And it's complicated because I think in an ideal world, and I was just mentioning how the Ravens passing game, and I want to be clear, I'm not at all putting it all on Lamar Jackson. I think it's been the passing game in its totality has kind of gone in a direction they wouldn't like since early in the season. In an ideal world, I think DeMarcus Robinson would be your number three wide receiver, but he's kind of become their default number one, you know, at least 1A with him and Devin Duvernay since Rashad Bateman, their first-round pick from a year ago, suffered a Liz Frank injury, and he's out for the year. So this is a team that, in my opinion, did not do enough at the wide receiver position in the offseason, but to Eric DaCosta's credit, to the Ravens' credit, they saw an opportunity when DeMarcus Robinson was let go by the Raiders in mid-August, and they picked him up at the end of the preseason. And he has done a nice job for them, especially look at the last few weeks, you know, in Tampa Bay a few weeks back, six catches, 64 yards. And he was kind of, you know, with also a nod to Mark Andrews in his return, he was kind of their only option in the passing game Sunday against Carolina, had a career-high 9 catches for 128 yards. Now, I think it's important to recognize DeMarcus Robinson's a veteran. He's a guy who's been around a long time. I'm not sure Sunday represents any kind of a dynamic breakout performance, but it does speak to how helpful he has been to this passing game that, frankly, lacks pass-catching weapons. So, again, relative to the big picture, you know, you'd like to not have to be in a position where he's maybe your number one wide receiver, but it's where the Ravens are right now, and I'll say at the very least they're happy that they have him because he has been a nice contributor for them on the outside.
A couple of more for Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore. You know, the winning franchises, Luke, make winning franchise decisions, and I just rolled my eyes right before the trade deadline when Roquan Smith was traded to Baltimore. It's like, of course he was. I mean, it's just what Baltimore does, right? They make ridiculously good decisions, maybe don't value draft picks as much as some teams, but when you're winning, you really don't need to. And now you have Roquan Smith and Patrick Queen, and I mean, that linebacking core there, Kyle Hamilton, the safety from Notre Dame that fell to Baltimore in the draft. I know he's a little banged up right now, but good grief, they've added some nice pieces on that defense.
They have, and I think what's interesting, Ryan, is if you would talk to anyone who watches team on a regular basis back in week 3, week 4, they would say the linebacker group was one of the weaknesses. Now, I still think, relatively speaking, to the rest of the defense, it's not as though it was awful, but you know, Patrick Queen kind of had an up and down first couple seasons and kind of got off to an uneven start early this year, but he was trending in the right direction. And then they add Roquan Smith, and it's turned a position that was a relative weakness into one that is very much looking like a very clear strength with a lot of upside. And, you know, so you know, Roquan Smith, however it plays out, remains to be seen. I mean, certainly the big story that kind of cultivated, you know, what was the catalyst for him being traded was he wanted a reported $20 million a year from the Chicago Bears, which can the Ravens pay him that much, knowing where they stand with Lamar Jackson and some other guys on the roster? I think that remains to be seen. I think they'd certainly love to make it happen, but you mentioned the draft. They traded second and fifth round picks in next year's draft for him. If they can't work things out, he'll probably leave and get a deal that'll fetch them a third round compensatory pick the following year. That's just kind of the way they work, the way they operate. They're always thinking a step or two ahead. But you know, I want to mention, because you mentioned his name, Kyle Hamilton, who, you know, again, another guy kind of got off to a little bit of a slow start. I think the Ravens are trying to figure out where to utilize his versatility in the best spot, at least as a rookie. And he had really kind of settled into becoming more of a big nickel back for them One position they're a little bit light in terms of established depth is corner behind their starters, Marlon Humphrey and Marcus Peters. You know, it's a bunch of young guys behind him and behind them. And Hamilton had really become, you know, a solidifying force at that nickel spot. So, you know, it sounds like the early indications on the knee are that it's not a serious knee injury, but is he going to play on Sunday? I think that's certainly up in the air and some doubt. But he's done a nice job for them. And you just said it. I mean, you know, the Ravens, I mentioned wide receiver. I mentioned the passing game. I mean, that's kind of the one area that has been a blind spot, in my opinion, for them for a long time. However, you know, defense and finding and identifying good young defensive football players, I mean, my goodness, go back to the days of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed, as you mentioned a few minutes ago. I mean, they just have an uncanny ability of finding value there. And as you mentioned, their linebackers and Kyle Hamilton, some really good young players that they've added to this defense here over the last couple of years.
Luke, as we say goodbye, we got about 90 seconds to go. Got to ask you about Calais Campbell. He returns to Jacksonville, more than likely his final game here in Jacksonville. Can't imagine he doesn't retire at the end of this year, or he just probably won't play again in this stadium if he decides to play another year. What has Calais Campbell meant to Baltimore, and how is he playing to this point this season?
He's had a terrific season. I mean, I mentioned some of the good young talent they've added to their defense, but they also just have a great act for adding a well-respected, you know, good, high character, and also a darn good football player, as people in Jacksonville know, in Calais Campbell. And he's been a great addition for them over the last couple of years. He's found the quarterback a little bit more this year. He's got 4.5 sacks, and he continues to play at a high level. He's probably not the ferocious pass rusher that he was years ago in Arizona and Jacksonville, but he can still get to the quarterback, as I mentioned, you know, those 4.5 sacks, and he's still a very high-level player against the run. So, you know, whether he's playing inside at more of a three technique or moving out to the edge on occasion, he's still a force for this Ravens defense. And if you just watched him play on any given Sunday, you wouldn't know that he's 36 years old. He's that good.
Wow, 36 years old. We love him here in Jacksonville, and he'll make his return on Sunday in a Baltimore Ravens uniform. Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore. Follow him on Twitter at Baltimore Luke. Luke, enjoy the ball game on Sunday. Have a very happy Thanksgiving beforehand, and we will talk again soon, my friend. Thank you so much.
Sounds good, Ryan. You as well. Happy Thanksgiving.
Time now for Hacker's High School Spotlight on Hacker After Dark.
And welcome into the High School Spotlight here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Boy, if you are still playing football in the high school game on Thanksgiving week, you have already had an incredible season, and that is the situation out at Raines High School. Head coach Donovan Maslin and the Vikings, winners over Ed White in round number one, a winner over Riverside in round number two, and boy, that sets up a huge one against Bowles this Friday night. Coach Maslin joins us here on the High School Spotlight. Coach, how we doing?
We're doing pretty good. New week, new beginning.
Hey, Coach, appreciate the time with you as always. All right, we certainly want to talk about the year, preview the Bowles game. But, boy, what a two-game run you guys have had. Going on the road, playing a very good Ed White team, you get it done there by double digits. Likewise, a very good Riverside team, your defense completely shuts them down. Boy, you guys are playing terrific football at the exact right time.
Yes, sir. That's always, you know, a coach's expectation is to be able to play well and peak at the right time, you know, heading into the playoffs. As I said earlier in the season, man, you know, those that first 4 weeks of the season, first 4 to 5 weeks of the season really got us prepared for, you know, moments like this. And, you know, I'm just excited to see the kids go out and execute what they've been practicing all year and what they, you know, practice and game plan all week. And, you know, to see them out there just having fun and, you know, playing the game that they love. So,
Coach, there's 8 teams left in the state of Florida in the 2M classification. You guys are one of the 8 that are left standing. That's pretty impressive. I mean, did you know, whether it's the spring or summer conditioning or even when fall camp started, that you might have a team that could make a run like this?
You know, over Christmas break after last season, had a, you know, a coaches meeting, and, you know, I challenged my staff to, you know, really make some sacrifices for the betterment, you know, of the program and, you know, the betterment of the team for the players. And, you know, the second week after we got back in January, you know, we started in the weight room, January 10th. And, you know, just getting in shape, conditioning, lifting weights. And then, you know, of course, we had some other kids doing other sports in the spring. But, you know, the kids were really determined to put forth a great season, put a good product on the field for, you know, for the community, for the alumni, and the tradition that we, you know, we must uphold. And, you know, this summer, it, you know, it kind of was kind of up and down with, you know, some 7-on-7 games, but we needed that. And then early in the season when we was able to win against Miami Pace, I kind of had a feeling, you know, this team, you know, we may have a good shot, you know, going into the playoffs if we find a way to win games like that. And, you know, that's what we've been doing.
Donovan Maslin, the head coach of Reigns, they are in the regional final Friday night against Bowles. You'll hear that game on 1010XL. Coach, before we get into the Bowles game, just the new playoff format, the Metro format. In your playoff games, you've played all local teams. Ed White in round one, Riverside in round two. Now you're going to play Bowles in the regional final. Do you like that because of the familiarity, or would you like to maybe branch out more in the postseason? What's your thought on that?
I mean, of course, you always want to branch out and play, you know, different schools, you know, within the state. But, you know, we just have a motto, you know, whenever, wherever, whoever, just put it down. And we don't get caught up in, you know, the classifications or the metro suburban. You know, that's what the state want to do. You know, we'll follow their guidance. But, you know, sometimes you may have to play a team twice in one season, you know, to make it out of the city. So in order to, you know, compete with other people in the state, you got to be the best in your area. So that's what we're trying to set out to do.
Coach, it's been a couple of years, but you were on the sidelines there with Duran Wiley and that Reigns staff when Reigns and Bowles played twice a year, basically. You knew they right. were going to play in the regular season. You knew that rematch was going to come in the postseason. Some went Bowles' way. Some went Reigns' way. There was controversy, obviously, in a couple of games, if memory serves. I mean, this was a great rivalry. We've lost it for the last couple of years, but now we get it back, and we get it back in a regional final with a spot in the Final Four on the line. What's your thought about Friday night's ball game?
Man, it's a great opportunity for the kids and the staff to go out and, you know, go out there and execute a game plan that, you know, they've wanted. You know, they wanted games like this. That's why you come to Reigns, to play in big-time games like this, a trip to the state semifinals. It's been a minute since we've been in a position like this, and, you know, we're just humbled. We're excited for the opportunity. You know, the kids, you know, they know some of the kids over there at Bowles. You know, coaching staff have family members over there at Bowles, so it's a little familiarity. But we're excited for the matchup. We're excited for the challenge, and it's going to be a great ball game.
Donovan Maslin of Reigns, as we begin to wrap up, Coach, what are some of your fondest memories from those Reigns Bowles games of a few years ago?
It's been some good ones, some bad ones, you know, some questionable personal foul face mask that extended Bowles drive one game at Reigns, and, you know, kind of shattered, you know, that run. And I want to say it might have been maybe like 14 or something like that. But, man, it's just been great battles. You know, Mac Jones, tough player. Mike Pinckney, tough player. You know, just it's great matchups, man. Kids going out there putting it all on the line. I remember one play is Augie DiBiase, you know, on an option play, taking it, you know, about 55, 60 yards for a touchdown to seal the win. So, great memories, you know, great coaching on both parts with Coach Duran Wiley and the late, great Corky Rogers. So you just want to keep it up, man, you know, keep the excitement going. It's going to be a great atmosphere out there in San Jose, and we're excited to, you know, to be in this position.
There's no question about it. San Jose Boulevard at the Bowles School, Reigns at Bowles Friday night, regional final, the winner to the state Final Four. Coach, what's your message to your kids this week as we wrap up with you? What are you telling them, and what are you getting them ready for on Friday?
You know, my message to all playoffs has been, you know, you got to earn your right to practice the next week. Earn another 5 days in the playoffs, well, 7 days if you count the weekend. But, you know, just earn the right, you know, earn that. It's not a privilege. It's not going to be given to you. You have to go out and earn it. And focus on the process and not the outcome of the game. Just stay dialed in on what you're supposed to do all week long and force your preparation. And then, you know, once game day comes and the game starts, just focus on each play. You know, taking one play at a time, one snap at a time, and just focus on executing and going out there having fun. You know, so just focus on the process and earn the right to continue to practice that following week.
You'll hear the game right here on 1010XL. Reigns at Bowles, the winner to the state Final Four. Donovan Maslin of Reigns High School. Coach, congrats on a great season and best of luck Friday night.
Thank you so much.
And thank you again to Reigns head coach Donovan Maslin. They got a big one on Friday night over here on San Jose Boulevard. Reigns and Bowles in the regional final there in the 2M classification. Another gargantuan game on Friday night is a rematch of a great game we saw in the regular season. It'll be University Christian traveling to Trinity Christian, and UC head coach David Penwin, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Coach, how we doing?
Good. How about you?
Coach, we are good, man. Thank you for the time. And man alive, you kind of knew at the beginning of the year this is where we all hoped it would be, a rematch from the regular season. You guys and Trinity, the winner to the state Final Four, really is what high school football is all about.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, when all the stuff came out, you knew Trinity was going to be in our district, and you know you got to play them one time, and the goal is to get to them a second time, or, you know, vice versa. I'm sure they're thinking the same thing. You know you're going to have a chance at a rematch, and to get to the rematch is definitely a successful year for both of us.
Coach, you know, you obviously know your team much better than I do, but just an outside point of view, when you lost the Trinity game in a hard-fought battle, I mean, it was 20-13. You played them about as close as anybody has this year. I was wondering how your team was going to respond, and I want to say it was like the week after that where you played Parker, and Parker jumped on you like up by 3 touchdowns in the first half, and I'm sitting at the radio studio thinking, all right, I wonder if they're going to lose twice because of the Trinity loss. And then whatever you did at halftime of that Parker game obviously worked because you came all the way back to win. You guys have looked fantastic since, and now you have the rematch with Trinity. I thought the second half of that Parker game really was a turning point for you guys.
Yeah, it was, you know, I just told them at halftime that, you know, you're about, you know, we're not playing UC football for one. We're slow. We're not getting any pass rush. We're not doing things uncharacteristic. And, you know, we're still in this game. And if you don't figure it out and turn around and stop blaming other people and just do your job, you'll come out on victorious. And, you know, we challenged them that at halftime. They came out and just played a unbelievable half of football. And after the game, I took them back upstairs and sat them down at the end of it. I said, you guys were about an inch away from losing everything that you worked for just because you felt bad and just because you were down a little bit and you were doing things uncharacteristic and you had your lip out. And you were this close from losing everything that you worked so hard for, but you didn't. You found a way. You came back out. You proved to us that you guys are a good football team. And they just turned it around that second half. It was fun to watch.
David Penlin, the head coach of University Christian, they're in the regional final in the 1M classification Friday night against Trinity, the winner to the state Final Four. I mean, obviously, you don't need to be a sports fan or a high school football fan to realize when two teams are a combined 21-1, this is going to be an amazing game. You're 10-1. 11-0 Trinity Christian. Your one loss was by a touchdown there late in the fourth quarter. What do you remember from that game, and what can you use, Coach, from that game in your preparation this week?
Yeah, it was, you know, we just got to eliminate the big plays. We had a couple big plays that kind of hurt us, and we didn't capitalize on some things that we could have done better at. And, you know, our guys – after that game, you don't really know how a team's going to react to a loss, especially when you're undefeated. And they handled it very well. You know, they're locked in. They're they wanted to play again. They wanted the rematch. And so I'm, you know, we're looking forward to it. Looking forward to the challenge again. And Trinity's a great football team. They got weapons everywhere, and we just got to be able to play our brand of football and go over there and kind of mimic what we did the first time, just clean up some things and eliminate the big plays.
You know, there's not a lot of coaching matchups in the state this week that have 12 state championship rings between the two head coaches, right? You got three, which is incredible. You're younger than I am. Obviously, Verlin's got 9. He would tie Corky Rogers with 10 if he were to be able to win 3 more games. What's the relationship there between the staffs, between you and Verlin? Because obviously you guys have accomplished a ton in your careers.
We've always had a good relationship. We always mess with each other, and you know, we've tried to play each other's over the years, and you know, there's no hard feelings between us. We respect both programs, and he respects ours, and I respect his. And he's a great coach. I mean, he's got the resume, and he's done a great job over at Trinity. And I'm trying to, you know, I'm the young guy trying to follow those guys in the footsteps. And he's got a lot of wins, and he's a lot of state championships. He's had some great football teams over there, and you know, we've had some good football teams. And even the years that we won a state, we played Trinity and we lost to them. So it's good to get that game back on the schedule, for the, you know, our program and their program. And, me and Verlin are good. And we you know, I always throw some jabs at him here and there, and he'll do the same to me. So we've got a good relationship.
Love the healthy competition there. Final moments with David Penwin of University Christian. They are at Trinity Christian on Friday night in the regional final, the winner to the state Final Four. Every time I talk about University Christian, I even was talking with Verlin last week on the postgame show, everybody always brings up Desario Riles, right? You got a terrific player over there. I believe, the kickoff return last week. I mean, what is it about him that makes him so good?
Oral Gray, you mean.
Oral Gray, that's right, yeah. I hear about Riles and Gray, that's right.
Riles is he's a great player. Yeah, that was you know, they scored, and I looked at Orel and I said, if they kick this deep, we're going to run a return. You're going to take it to the house. And I said, they'd be dumb to kick it deep. Well, they kicked it deep, and he took it to the house. He's just a special player. He's very hard to bring down. He's smart. He's tough. You know, he's been playing here since he's been playing on varsity since he's been in eighth grade, and to see the type of player from then to now is just unbelievable. Like he's the workhorse. He's going to find a way to get it done. He's had a great senior season. He's got 1700 yards rushing. He's leading 1M in rushing. I think he's leading the state in scoring. So he's just done a great job in the backfield. And, you know, Desario has done a good job of going from quarterback to DN and tight end. And at the beginning, it was a little rough, but he's bought in, and I think he's got 10 sacks. And he's just, you got to respect him wherever he is at on the field. So it's nice having those two guys.
Yeah, Riles and Gray are a terrific combo there for University Christian, no question about that. All right, final moments. I cannot begin to imagine the atmosphere on Friday night. Invite them out. It's going to be at Trinity. I imagine you guys are going to be bringing a lot of people with you from university, and I'm sure it's going to be standing room only there on Friday night.
Absolutely. It's going to be a great football game. Love to see everybody out there. There's a lot of people at the first game, and I'm expecting to see a lot more of this one. So we're looking forward to it.
David Penland of University Christian. They're at Trinity on Friday in the regional final. Coach, congratulations on what's been a great year to this point. Best of luck on Friday night.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Hacker.
Back here on the High School Spotlight, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. It is regional final week here in Northeast Florida. Let's review the games of last week and certainly preview a big Friday night ahead with Justin Barney of Channel 4, always kind enough to join us here on 1010 XL. Justin, how we doing?
Not too bad, Hack. Thanks for having me. Busy week around here.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And look, it's a busy week because of all the great matchups we have. Let's briefly look back at last week. It was built up to be a big game in St. John's County, Justin, but for the second time this year, boy, Bartram just showing complete dominance over Creekside once again.
Yeah, I thought the regular season game to me was kind of Bartram's emergence this season. It was just a game where it flashed things on the defensive side of the ball, the offensive side of the ball. And really, I thought that was kind of the high water mark for Bartram, that it hit that point and it just has not let off since that pace. And last week was more of a defensive type of performance along with that offense, really choked out that Creekside offense, which few teams have been able to do this year. Creekside's offense, if anything, has been very predictable in terms that it can hit 40 points on the scoreboard relatively easily, and we're not able to do that last week. And Bartram just showed the depth of that program. Riley Truillo at quarterback, Lathan Biddle really going into his own as an elite running back, but those guys underclassmen as well, and they just could not be stopped last week by Creekside. And Bartram is a state semifinal team this year. I think this is one of Darrell Sutherland's best teams that he has had in terms of consistency. Would not be surprised to see them beat Buchholz and eventually make it to a state championship game, but a tough one on Friday night at Bartram.
You know, it's interesting how the roles have reversed. Bartram could not beat St. Augustine forever once Bartram opened, and now Bartram is kind of the king of the mountain, and Creekside is trying to dethrone them, and it just simply is not happening. This offseason, I guess Creekside's got to figure some things out, because it appears if they ever want to get to the promised land, they're going to have to get through Bartram. And right now, that's just simply not happening.
Just has not happened for them. They've beaten the big brother Bartram Trail one time in 16 tries. So you've got to get over that hump, and they will eventually. I really thought Creekside this year was a little bit further ahead than I thought. They had graduated so many players, and what Creekside needs to do, and I think is getting to that point, is put in that infrastructure like a Bartram Trail has, where the Bartram has been so good under Darrell Sutherland because they've not had to really rebuild a team. They missed the playoffs twice in their program history. They opened in 2000, so do that math. They are very, very good, very consistent. The coaching staff there has been there since the beginning. Darrell Sutherland, the only head coach in Bartram history. And to get to that point, you have to have that infrastructure in place where you don't have those big blue chip guys every year. You don't have those massive quarterback recruits going to big time schools, that you're able to kind of ride the ebbs and flows of that. And Bartram has been able to do that for so long. And, you know, for a long time, it was St. Augustine and St. John's County that was able to do that. But Bartram has really kind of surpassed those teams in the county and really put in that program, that stability in place where you're able to survive that. I think Creekside will get there. I think Sean McIntyre doing a great job to implement that. And I think they're still probably a couple years away from that because Sean has not been there as long as Darrell has, but he is doing a good job and the right path to get there. But Bartram Trail, really the blueprint for many, many teams in the area to follow.
Justin Barney of Channel 4 here with us on 1010XL. Of course, the other big games last week, Rains over Riverside. You also had Baker County over Baldwin. I want to get into this week's matchups, Justin. Before we get there, I would imagine you share this sentiment with me. I cannot begin to tell you how much I hate college football being played on Friday night. Now, this is a little different because traditionally Black Friday does have Friday night games, but in our area, it's Florida State for the first time ever. Have you gotten a feel from the high school community with big matchups this weekend of how the Gators and the Noles on the same night might affect attendance or anything along those lines?
No, I think when you're a local team and a local school, you're going to have those families and support and whatnot get to the seats on Friday night. Disappointing, you know, but we've seen that before with Florida State, Miami playing on, you know, a Monday night or even a Friday or a Thursday night. So again, I think the fans, the parents will come out. Again, it's a game. There's more options than just Florida State to do. You know, if this was Florida State competing for a, you know, spot in the national title game, I think that may be different. But these are two teams with, you know, just a natural rivalry game. Florida's not having that great of a year. Florida State is on the rebound under Coach Mike Norvell, but I do think we're still going to have some packed houses on Friday night. When you talk about a Bowles Reigns or Trinity UC or Bradford Baker County, so many good storylines in those games. It's Black Friday, playoff football, spot in the state semifinals on the line. I think those games on Friday night are going to be packed.
There are four big ones. Let's talk about each of them. Let's begin in Bradford County. And you almost thought it had to be this way, right? First year back for Jamie Rogers in the state of Florida at Bradford County, going up against a team he took to the state championship game a few years ago in Baker County. This is a rematch of sorts. This game only got about a quarter and a half in in week one, right? Week one or two of the season before it basically got rained out. They never made it up. So a little bit of familiarity there. But what's your thought, Baker County going to Bradford County in the regional final?
Yeah, I think a good pick to actually finish this game this time. In week one, it was called at the half. Bradford was up 21-0. That result wound up staying put. So Bradford, a win over Baker County this year. And, you know, Baker County had never been to the third round of the playoffs before Jamie Rogers got there. He arrived there in his second year. He took them not only past the third round before, but to the state championship game in his second year. Now, Bradford has never been past the third round of the state playoffs. Jamie Rogers got a little experience with that when he took Baker, his alma mater, to that championship game in 2017. So we'll see if he can get the Tornadoes over that hump. I think it's going to be a great one. You know, Baker County and Bradford season started with one another, and for one of these teams, it's going to finish with one another. So it will be a great game. We'll see if that Baker County offense with Cam Smith running the ball really well can solve that Bradford defense, that something teams have not been able to do this year. Bradford's defense has just had a vice grip on opposing offenses, not allowed a point in the playoffs. We'll see if they can keep that going on Friday night and start.
Justin Barney of Channel 4. One thing about this game, and I'm curious the feedback you've gotten, Justin, from coaches in the high school community. Baker County is a great example. First round game against Yulee, a rematch of the regular season. Second round game against Baldwin, a rematch of the regular season. Regional final now against Bradford, a rematch of the regular season. Where we are now, Metro and Suburban, you cut down on some of the travel in these instances, but you're playing the same teams in the postseason. Has there been any negativity towards that you've heard?
I think the biggest thing that I have heard is it's tough to beat the same team twice in a season. So I don't know how true that is. At the high school level, we see it all the time in NFL spurts. But Baker County beat Yulee in the regular season, so beat them in the playoffs. They lost to Baldwin in the regular season, but beat them in the playoffs. So I think it bounces back and forth. But I think in this case, you know, Baker County has a split in that scenario the last 2 weeks. So beating Baldwin and then and also beating Yulee, so they went 1-1 in the regular season against those. But I think the biggest thing is, you know, from coaches, I was out at Trinity Christian earlier today, and you know, Verlin Dormany said that the toughest thing about having to beat a team twice is convincing the players on your team that this team that you're playing, that you've already beaten one time, is a challenge and can beat you. So, you know, when you're dealing with younger kids and teenagers, it's tough to kind of get them to hone in and say, hey, this can happen. This team can beat you, even though they didn't beat you before. So I think that is a challenge that a lot of high school coaches face if you have to see a team twice in the regular season. But, you know, not often do you see a team three times in the, you know, three rounds in the playoffs when you've seen that team all season long before. So a little bit of a unique situation, the new setup we have, and with the regions, how they were, will be interesting with some of these rematches we have going on.
You go to Class 4S. We mentioned Bartram Trail. Justin, you've covered high school ball for a while around here. Certainly you're one of the guys to ask, is this the best Bartram team you've ever seen to this point?
That's a good question. I've seen some pretty darn good Bartram teams, and I've seen some Bartram teams with Nathan Peterman at quarterback and P.J. Blaise-Jousey going down to Sefner-Armwood and losing a heartbreaker down there. So it's tough to say until you get into these kind of make-or-break rounds. You know, Corky Rogers, I remember having a conversation with him multiple times. Who's your best team, Corky? And a lot of people will say that 96 Bowls team was the best team that they've ever seen. But again, that 96 team did not win a state championship. And the 2004 Bowls team did win a state championship. So it's tough to say until you get to that definitive point in the season where a state championship is on the line. I've seen some very, very good teams, some 10-0 teams lose in the first and second round of the playoffs. So until you get to these make or break times, I think even Darrell Sutherland would say that. You know, his team that played for a state championship game previously, he would probably mention that team as being one of the best ones. Until you get to that Final Four, to that state championship rounds, but certainly this Bartram Trail team, should it keep ascending, could very well make that claim.
Bartram, the last team standing in St. John's County, they beat Gainesville-Buholtz in the regular season. Do you see any reason, Justin, not to believe that won't happen again on Friday night?
Buchholz is a good team, very, very scrappy, good team. I got Whittemore back there at quarterback, who's kind of the all-purpose guy, can do a little bit of everything. You know, I think what Bowles did to them in week 11, maybe a little bit of a recipe for Bartram this time around. You know, that first Bartram-Buchholz game was 21-6, really kind of a defensive struggle. I think we'll see a lot more points this time from both teams, but I don't think Buchholz has enough to get past Bartram at Bartram Trail on Friday.
All right, let's go. There's two more left in Class 1M. You kind of knew this was going to happen, right? There's going to be a first series in the regular season, and the sequel was going to be in the playoffs. It's going to be at Trinity Christian. Both these teams, University and Trinity, a combined 21-1 that game in the regular season. Trinity won by a touchdown, 20-13. You said you met with Trinity earlier today. What's your thought on Trinity and University on Friday night?
I think that's I think it's a massive matchup. I don't think you really need to hype this game up too much. It's two of the most preeminent state championship winning teams in Florida history. Both teams, 9 state titles. They have had a good rivalry back and forth, but the last time UC won in this series was all the way back in 1991. A little bit of a good omen there if they beat Trinity Christian for the first time since 91. UC's title in 91 followed that Trinity Christian win. So if UC can win this game against Trinity Christian, I think it's a long shot. I think Trinity Christian, you know, in that first game, the big difference there was a 2013 game, and Colin Hurley did not play in that game. So Trinity really scaled back its offense and went with kind of feeding the beasts of Darnell Rogers and Treyon Webb. And you're going to see a little bit more of a thorough Trinity Christian this time around, the ability to throw the ball, not have to get in the wildcat a lot. And when you got an LSU committed quarterback and as good as Colin Hurley is throwing the ball, that certainly changes the complexion of the game for University Christian. I know UC wanted another shot at Trinity Christian. They will get that. Both those teams, a little bit of a struggle in the first half on Friday night against two smaller schools. First Academy, UC went on to beat 42-13, and Trinity pulled away in the second half to beat Orlando Christian Prep 30-13. So this is a game that's going to go 4 quarters. It is not going to be decided in the first half, but UC, tough road ahead if they want to beat Trinity Christian. Orel Gray will wear the bullseye on Friday night for University Christian. He is the guy that Trinity has to shut down. He is a game changer, and he is going to be the guy that Trinity has to stop to keep UC in check.
Final moments here with Justin Barney of Channel 4 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Finally, Justin, that gets us to our game that we'll have on 1010XL this upcoming week. It's Rains and Bowls. There was a time where this was a great regular season game, it was a great postseason game. When they were in the district together, it was unbelievable, and there was a lot of controversy in some of those games. I'm sure you'll recall that. They haven't played in a couple of years. It's no longer Corky Rogers and Duran Wiley. Now it's Matthew Toblin and Donovan Maslin. What's your thought on what should be a humongous game on San Jose Boulevard between Bowles and Reigns?
Yeah, I can't tell you how many of these Bowles-Reigns games I covered from 2012 through 2016. I think I saw every one of them, and there were some classic matchups. You mentioned no more Corky Rogers, no more Duran Wiley in that series, and those two coaches, such respect for each other. Now, it was Bowles that had a state record 91-game district winning streak, a state record that will never be touched, ended by Reigns in 2011. The Vikings went on to win 26-21 in that game and really kind of flipped history on its head. Bowles came back and won the meeting in the playoffs and went on to win that state championship that year, number 11 in the playoffs in 2011. So those two teams have played just some absolute barn burners, some classics, one-possession games, overtime games, games with controversy, games that were blowouts. Last time these teams played in the 2016 playoffs, Bowles 60, Reigns 20, a game that I covered and remember very well. And that game really propelled Reigns to greater things in the 2 years that followed with back-to-back state championships. So they used that loss for the better. But those games, every year you knew you were going to get a classic between those teams. And I think we're going to get another good one on Friday night. A new era, no Corky, no Duran. But Donovan Maslin knows that series and history well. He's been an assistant on those Reigns teams that played Bowles in the past. So I think it's going to be a classic showdown on San Jose Boulevard on Friday night.
Hard to believe it's been 6 years since these two teams played. All right, Justin, final question, man. The 4 games in the listening area, we've talked about all 4 of them. How would you rank them? If there is somebody listening right now that's thinking about going to a regional final, again, every one of these games, the winner will go to the state final four in their given classification. If you were to rank them, say, 1, 2, 3, and 4 on environment, you know, competition, just best game out there on Friday night, how do you see it?
Oh, man, it's so – that is a toss-up between all these games. I would say Bowles Rains 1, University Christian, Trinity Christian 2, Bartram Buchholz 3, and Baldwin-Baker County 4. And a little bit further out, the listening area, Columbia and Choctaw throw down. Suwannee goes to Tallahassee to play Florida High. And then you've got Union County hosting on Friday night Lafayette. The Hornets go over to Lake Butler. So some good ones outside of the viewing area too. But I think Bowles Rains certainly at the top of that list, just with the history between those programs.
It is going to be outstanding. I can't wait. Justin Barney of Channel 4. Justin, great job as always, man. A very happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we'll do it again next week.
Take care, Hack. Thanks for having me.
Justin Barney of Channel 4, always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. And, yeah, there are just some huge, huge matchups. Again, each one of the winners from Friday night will advance to the state final four in their given classifications. Well, that'll just about wrap it up for what has been a very busy Tuesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Thank you to everybody that joined us in the high school spotlight tonight. That was University Christian head coach David Penland, Rains head coach Donovan Maslin. You just heard from Justin Barney of Channel 4. I want to thank Luke Jones, WNST Radio in Baltimore, giving us the Ravens side of the Jaguars and the Ravens this Sunday here in Jacksonville. And, of course, my man Brent Beard. You get him on First Coast News. You also get him weekly here with me on Hacker After Dark. We'll be back tomorrow night on a Wednesday, our show, last show before Thanksgiving, and we will do it all over again beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the Hacker Ryan Green in Jacksonville. Thank you for spending part of your Tuesday night with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have a terrific remainder of your Tuesday night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on a Wednesday beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.